Hey y'all, it's Janice. Welcome to the Dirty Diversity Podcast. This is a place where we will be exploring equity, racism, and diversity. I am a DEI consultant, educator, writer, and professor who strives to center my work around the liberation of Black folks globally. More specifically, I examine and unpack how we can create structures that support the most marginalized folks in the workplace. This is a podcast where I will share my thoughts on all things diversity, equity, inclusion, racism, anti-racism, and Black liberation. My goal is to stimulate your mind and shift you to think in a way that you've never considered before. This podcast will feature my thoughts as well as the perspectives of different folks doing related work. If you want to learn more, pick up my best-selling books, Dirty Diversity and The Pink Elephant, where I explore workplace equity in more detail. Thank you for listening.
Hey y'all, Jay Nice on the mic, back with season 4 of the Dirty Diversity Podcast. Happy New Year, even though it's February. I'ma still say Happy New Year, y'all. I have not spoken with y'all in this new year, 2023. 2023 is an interesting year numerically, but my birthday falls on March 23rd. So this year, my birthday is 3/23/23. I'm a sucker for like numbers and those cool dates. And I think that would be a cool date to get married, like 3/23/23. For those of y'all out there listening, maybe some of y'all are getting married on that date. But so I want to take care of a few housekeeping items. We are in the best time of the year, Black History Month right now. I'm celebrating my 2-year anniversary of the Pink Elephant newsletter. If y'all are on LinkedIn, I have a weekly newsletter that I share about that focuses on racial equity, and a lot of the newsletter issues that I post are actually Forbes articles that I've written. And because there are sometimes restrictions on what you can read with the larger publications, part of my goal with my newsletter is to democratize the information that we see on these larger platforms. So I'm celebrating the 2-year anniversary of my Pink Elephant newsletter. If you're on LinkedIn, it's free to read. If you're not on LinkedIn, you could still read the newsletters actually. But if you are on LinkedIn, you can get the newsletter straight to your inbox. I have a link in the show notes if you want to subscribe to the newsletter. Also, I am available. I still have some slots available for Q1 and Q2 this year. If your organization is looking for a speaker to come in to speak around topics of anti-racism, anti-oppression, anti-Blackness, and addressing our internalized anti-Blackness, I am your girl. Reach out to me. My email is in the show notes as well. But I do have some slots and some availability. This is actually the first year that I have this availability in the last 7 years. As y'all know, I've been teaching in higher education for the last 7 years, and I recently quit my teaching job in July of 2022, and I've never had January and February free before. Like, I've never experienced the beginning part of the year being free. So I always set my schedule up so that I have a lighter load during the first part of the year. So during Q1 and Q2, and then Q3 and Q4, I usually take on more clients because that's when I have more flexibility with my schedule. In the spring, the winter and the spring, I always take on and teach a lot of classes. So I'm actually super excited that I can pour into your workplaces and I can pour into the things that I love to do, which is speaking, conducting workshops, consulting, and providing guidance for your organization or institution. So slide into my DMs or send me an email And let's get to work. Let's talk about how we can work together. If you enjoy the Dirty Diversity podcast, please leave a review. Thank y'all so much for those of you who listen faithfully. Or if this is your first episode, thank you for tuning in. I love the idea that you've decided to spend this little sliver of your day with me. I appreciate it. So, since the last time I recorded this episode, I didn't have all of these updates, but my third book, which is being published through Barrett Kohler Publishers, they are actually distributed through Penguin Random House, which is super exciting. But my third book, Decentering Whiteness in the Workplace, is officially available for pre-order. Let's pause for the cheers right now. So my book is officially available for pre-order. I'm so excited. It is a little less than 7 months till my book drops, and I will be sharing a lot more snippets and pieces of the book with y'all as my podcast listeners. So right now you can pre-order the book, and in the very first link in the show notes will be the link to pre-order the book. We're still working on a cover design, so we haven't chosen a design. There was none that I really fell in love with, but then I saw one and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So hopefully I think we'll nail down a cover design very soon, but I'm really, really, really excited about this book. I spent the last 2 to 3 months really working on it. So October, November, and December of 2022, your girl was grinding. I did not get a break. So that's why this podcast is starting in February, because I took January to ease into the 2023 year. I was really exhausted. And so I really wanted to be intentional about, you know, giving myself time to break after submitting a 50,000 word manuscript. But I am really excited to share with y'all that it is available for pre-order. So the link to that, again, is in the show notes. And I will have some updates as well. I don't think I shared this with y'all, did I? No, I didn't. Because it was happening in December. I think before I finished recording, by December, I had already recorded all the episodes for season 3. But in December, I had a chance to go to another reason why my December was exhausting, but in a nourishing way, if that makes sense, is because I went to California to the LinkedIn Learning Campus. So I always butcher this name, but Carpentria is where I went in California. And I shot my very first LinkedIn Learning course. I'm so, so excited about that. Hopefully, I'm just hoping the stars align and that course drops on my birthday, 3/23/23. But I'll be sharing more information with you all as the listeners first about that LinkedIn Learning course. And y'all are actually the first to hear, because I've shared it with my, if you are connected with me on Instagram, I've shared it with my Instagram audience, but only in the stories, right? And we know those disappear. So if you don't watch my stories, you probably didn't know this, but yes, I'm really excited to share more with y'all. But all the info to connect with me if you're on Instagram or LinkedIn is in the show notes as well. Also, y'all, I'm trying to get into Facebook. I used to be really big into Facebook when I started when I was in college. And so in like the late 2000s, like 2007, 2008, 2009, I was heavy on Facebook. And even in grad school, I was on Facebook a lot. But I don't know, in the last 5 years, I've kind of like not really been on Facebook like that. A lot of the folks that I interact with aren't on Facebook a lot. I'm trying to get more into Facebook because I know that there may be some folks that are not on LinkedIn and are not on Instagram, and some of the audience that need, the folks that, you know, I feel like everybody needs to read my book, to be honest, but I feel like there's a separate audience on Facebook. So I'm trying to get more into Facebook, y'all. So I'm gonna drop a link to my Facebook in the show notes. I have a Facebook page, like a regular page, personal page, And then I have like a Facebook page. Y'all can't see me now, but I'm doing air quotes, where it's like, you could have a page if you're an actor or a singer or a model or a public figure. And like 10 years ago, right? Listen to how wild this is, right? And my apologies ahead of time to y'all who said I ramble. I read in this in the reviews of this podcast, somebody said I like take a long time to get to the point. Skip through this if you don't want to hear this story, but and my apologies to y'all who say I ramble, but like 10, not even 10 years ago, in 2010, my ex, right? I was dating someone and my ex had actually created a Facebook page for me. It was like an author page, right? 10 years before I was even an author, he created like a Facebook page for me. And I think that I took over the page. And so I have like a separate page if you want to just support me as a individual. And then I have like the personal page that we all have, like the regular page, right? So I'm going to drop both of those in the show notes. So random, but I think manifestation is really powerful in speaking things into ourselves. If we want to be a college graduate, or you want to be a professor, or you want to be an author, speaking those things into existence, because I didn't even realize that that's what would be happening, and that 10, 12 years, 13 years after that page was created, I would be a three-time author. Like, that is amazing. So I say all that to say, if y'all, you know, I know some of y'all, Facebook is your jam. If you're on Facebook, let's connect. The info for my Facebook pages is in the show notes. So thank y'all for bearing with me with all of those announcements. I think that's pretty much it. So I wanted to, in this episode, I wanted to really dive into an article that I wrote, which was titled Four Ways That Anti-Blackness Shows Up in the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Space. So I thought this was, excuse me, a really important article to write, because I haven't seen anything like this. I think a lot of the articles that I read, I'm a ferocious like skimmer. I try to skim and read a lot of DEI related articles, but I would say I'm a pretty ferocious skimmer when it comes to DEI related content, because I want to learn as much as I can and know about as much as I can and hear different perspectives. I just finished Lily Zhang's book, Deconstructing DEI. It was interesting. I will say I follow Lily on LinkedIn, and I find Lily's LinkedIn posts really interesting and super informative. And one of the things that I got from Lily's book was the emphasis, and in Lily's opinion, the importance of metrics while doing DEI, right? I think sometimes there's an overemphasis on metrics and on the quantitative data and not enough emphasis on qualitative analyses, but metrics can be quantitative or qualitative, right? So Lily in their book really focused on, you know, as DEI practitioners, we need to be measuring the impacts of our interventions, which I agree with. There were some parts of Lily's book I will say I would push back on, but it was great to read their book and get their perspective. So Deconstructing DEI, I know a lot of y'all listening, if you're active on LinkedIn, you probably follow Lily, but I'm now listening to, so I read Shireen Daniel's book, The Anti-Racist Organization. Love Shireen. And I also interviewed her about her book last summer. But I'm listening to the audiobook version now, because sometimes when I listen to audiobook versions of things versus like the physical book, I'm able to pull out new information. So I'm listening to Shireen Daniel's book. I have so many books on my queue, right? I have been reading Elizabeth Leiba's book, I'm Not Yelling. Great book. I have also been reading, I have books sitting on my table right now. So I just got this book. Well, let's not get into that, all these books. But I'm reading, I'm about to start reading the Anti-Racist Business book by Trudy LeBron. So I say all that to say I'm a ferocious DEI. I try to read and stay up to date with a lot of books and articles, and I don't see a lot of DEI folks talking about how rampant anti-blackness is within the DEI space. And in fact, I think when a lot of us, or when folks bring anti-blackness up, we are silenced, right? So if you're on LinkedIn, you may have seen this stat that was posted about from Zipia.com about the percentage of chief diversity officers that are, like, the racial demographics and breakdown of chief diversity officers. So this data was apparently taken from the 2019 census, United States census. So in the United States, according to Zipia.com, 81% of chief diversity officers in the U.S. in 2019 were white, compared to only 3% that were black. So one of the ways that anti-blackness shows up is when it comes to people's perceptions of expertise. People are less likely always to see black people as experts, even when it comes to being experts of our own oppression. Now, I know that there has been some pushback about this data, the stats, right? And even me, I looked at it and I was like, chief diversity officer doesn't include all the folks who work in diversity or DEI related roles that have a different title, right? You could be a chief HR officer, which I think those are primarily white too, but you could be a diversity manager, you could be a DEI executive, but your title isn't necessarily CDO. So I do think that data from Zipia doesn't necessarily capture the fullness of those engaging in DEI work. Also, the data was taken in 2019 before the murder of George Floyd. And I do think that there have been more efforts after the murder of George Floyd to hire black folks and other people of the global majority into DEI related roles. I will say, I don't think that it's just because you are a person of the global majority, you're black, you're indigenous, you're Asian, you are non-white. I don't think that should be the only qualifier to do equity work. But I do think that it's important that people with lived experience with racism are guiding that work. But I think that that work should also be informed by research and by reading and by learning from those that came before you. But one of the ways that anti-blackness shows up is that, you know, when you're vetting chief diversity officers on paper, if you're looking at a black candidate and a non-black candidate, oftentimes black candidates don't necessarily have the quote-unquote educational qualifications that would secure them a chief diversity officer role. And part of the reason for that is that there's racial disparities in educational attainment, and black people and Hispanic and Latine people are less likely to hold a bachelor's or advanced degree. So if part of the requirements for the chief diversity officer is that they have to hold a college degree, you're already eliminating a large portion of black and Hispanic and Latine people from the pool, especially if you're looking for degrees in specific fields, right, in industries, which I don't think you need a degree to do equity work or to be a chief diversity officer, right? And there are barriers that a lot of black folks face, and the inherent anti-blackness and snap judgments that people make about the perceived lack of knowledge, skills, and expertise that black people have means that black people are not seen as experts, even when it comes to something like diversity, equity, and inclusion. So another piece of that, when it comes to expertise and the lack of expertise that black people, lack of expertise that people think black people have, I know that was kind of a tongue twister, is that, like, even when it comes to contributing knowledge to the field of diversity, equity, and inclusion, black people's voices are often ignored or erased or are just simply not there, right? So I'll give you an example. 2023, so this year, McKinsey came out with a report called the 2023 McKinsey report, I think is just what it was, but it was looking at, they were looking at factors that contributed to significant, quantifiable, scalable, and sustainable DEI impact, right? So this was essentially a DEI report, a 2023 DEI report. And so one of the important things that was noted was that the report included several different perspectives from different authors, different non-white authors, but none of the authors that contributed to that McKinsey report were Black. And you would think that with race and racism and anti-Blackness being such a big part of DEI and such an important part to tackle, that you would include Black authors and Black, you know what I'm saying? But there were no Black authors that were included in that report. Although I do want to mention that I think that the authors did reach out to some Black people to contribute their thoughts, but the authors themselves, when I looked through and kind of did research on them, I don't think any of the authors were Black. So it's important to make sure that your DEI efforts do have a focus on anti-racism and anti-Blackness. There will be no DEI efforts that will be successful without a focus on anti-Blackness. All other forms of oppression are at the base and the foundation of our forms of oppression is anti-Blackness. Everything else stems from and stems out of anti-Blackness. And until we interrogate the ways that anti-Blackness manifests, and even in the ways that we vet employees and our own chief diversity officers, then we won't be able to achieve any sort of equity in our workplaces. So that was point one, which was expertise and our perceived, our perceptions of expertise and how we often don't think Black people have the expertise, even when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Another way that anti-Blackness shows up in the DEI space is in pay equity. I've experienced this. So many of us who do this work have experienced this, where people just don't want to pay your rate, right? Like, we are in Black History Month right now, and the amount of people that when my communications manager contacts them, talks with them, I share a, you know, I hop on a discovery call, I share a proposal. The amount of folks that ask if I can lower my rate is, to me, just ridiculous, right? Like, the fact that Black people are always nickeled and dimed, and when we set a rate and say, this is the amount that I speak for, this is the amount that I facilitate workshops for, we are told that that is just not what corporations and folks are willing to spend on or to invest in, right? And so there are this, the same pay equity issues that we see in the workplace are just magnified and replicated within the DEI space, right? Even when it comes to Black speakers. And in the article, I talked about Lovey Ajayi. She was tweeting years ago about the pay disparities. She was asked to speak for a conference and they said that they had no money to pay her. She talked with other folks in the space and found out that I think Gary Vaynerchuk was being paid money to speak at that same conference that told her that they weren't paying speakers. Gary Vaynerchuk, for those who don't know, he's like a, I don't know what he's considered, like a business guru. I don't know, but he's a white male business guru. I listened to his stuff and in the past a lot more than now. I liked a lot of the stuff he would discuss. He has like sort of like a no-nonsense way of just giving advice. But Lovey Ajayi is a Black millennial woman. She has she's a New York Times bestselling author, TED Talker, and she does a lot of dope things. And you know, she, even her being a New York Times bestselling author and having all of these amazing things under her belt, being a having a viral, a 3 million viewed TED Talk, didn't command or didn't, in the organizers' minds, they felt like that wasn't worthy of paying her, or that their audience, I don't know what their rationale was, so I can't even sit here and try to like rationalize with that. But these same issues are magnified in the DEI space, where us as Black practitioners, we're frequently underpaid, right? A lot of folks ask us to donate our time, our energy, our efforts for free 99 or for quote unquote exposure. And as I've said before, as a lot of folks on LinkedIn have said, exposure doesn't pay our bills. Exposure is not an acceptable form of payment for my student loans. And so the amount of labor that is extracted from Black folks or that is expected from Black folks is another indication of the anti-Blackness that is rampant within this space, where we are expected, even Black employees within their own organizations are expected to share their pain and their trauma for the sake of white enlightenment without any sort of investment in them as an individual or as a person. The thing is, like, you, it's almost like an expectation, right? And we expect and we want free Black labor, and we insist that payments and exposure will be enough, right? And in the article, I included some additional thoughts from Black DEI practitioners who share their experiences with this particular issue. But y'all got to pay us, right? And I see that this is rampant where we're asked to lower our rates. I never ask a Black business owner to lower their rates, right? If I go to get my hair done and someone is charging $200, if that's their rate, that's their rate. I don't believe in nickel and diming people. And I feel like people place value on their time and their energy and their effort and their experience. You're not paying just for me to come talk. You're paying for all of the knowledge, the skills, the experience, and the expertise that I'm bringing with me. And I think that more organizations and institutions need to understand that. It is so disgustingly rude to just be nickel and diming consultants and practitioners, especially during Black History Month, right? That is a microaggression in and of itself. So another way that anti-Blackness shows up is that in workplaces, we deprioritize what is deemed as Black issues, right? And this is what I wrote in the article. I said, it seems there is a growing fatigue around workplaces when it comes to what has been deemed as Black issues, because it seems like anti-Blackness dominated much of the public conversations following the murder of George Floyd. Many companies are stepping back from a Black-centric focus, with some claiming that there has been too much focus on Black employees. No workplace will be able to remedy structures that perpetuate bias, racism, inequities, and oppression if the most marginalized communities are not prioritized. So I see this a lot with my work when I'm asked to lead a discussion on supporting Black employees. And when I specifically ask about why we are not being specific enough in talking about Black employees, there's this idea that other marginalized communities will feel left out of the conversation, right? But it's important to understand that us focusing on, for example, anti-Asian bias or anti-Asian hate or anti-Asian sentiment doesn't and shouldn't take away from what's happening to other marginalized communities. Focusing on Black people and the universal nature and globalness of anti-Blackness, it's important to understand that in order for our interventions, our DEI interventions, to be effective, specificity is required. We have to be very intentional and specific about the communities that we're centering our work around. And we can't just adopt these very broad sorts of interventions and expect them to work for everyone, right? If someone is sick with a particular illness, there is medicine that is designed for individuals that have that particular illness. You can't expect everybody with other types of illnesses to take that medicine and it work for them. And so I think it is important that we're really intentional about developing interventions for Black employees and being able to just say, these are the issues that affect Black employees specifically, without sort of that awkwardness or that uncomfortability that comes with having that conversation. There is this pervasive narrative that, a lot of folks say DEI trainings are not effective. DEI trainings, and that's also what, listening to Lily's book, Lily Zhang's book, Lily Zhang also mentioned that, right? And I know that in their posts on LinkedIn, they've talked about DEI trainings and how they're ineffective. But I think that a lot of the focus isn't on Black employees specifically and their feelings about DEI training, but a lot of our measuring stick for whether a training is effective or not is whether it changed the white person, right? But we don't spend enough time looking at perceptions of the training from the perspective of people of the global majority, right? Do they feel safer after the training? Are they satisfied with the training? And so we have to bring the focus back to Black specific issues if we ever want to create an environment that is based on equity and that is centered on equity for all. We have to reprioritize and refocus and recenter Black issues. And so the fourth way that anti-Blackness shows up in the DEI space is that we aggregate all non-white employees together, right? And I think that this is just a really common mistake where we want to make assumptions we take large chunks of data and we want to just make assumptions about a large group of employees, right? So we'll be like, you know, the people of color, I hate that term, but the people of color in our workplace are this and that. And it's like, yeah, that might be so. You might have representation from different communities, right? I worked with an organization and they said they had a lot of people of color represented, right? But when you break it down, there were a lot of East Asians, there were a lot of South Asians, there were a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, there were a good amount of Latine employees, but there were very few Black employees, right? And so saying that there is a lot of people of color erases and undermines the specific issue of the lack of Black employees that are being hired, right? And so it's important that when we're introducing programs that are aimed at creating an anti-racist workplace, that the employees that experience the most severe forms of harm are centered. And in order to figure that out in our workplace, we have to disaggregate the data and we have to be really intentional about examining trends with specific populations of employees, right? To design interventions with precision that are aimed at rectifying the issues of inequities, it requires us to be specific and as nuanced as possible. So like thinking about like what workplace trends are we noticing from different racial and ethnic groups, and looking at intersectional data is important, right? So you might see that you have a lot of Black men rising to the upper echelons of the organization, but there is no representation for Black women or Black non-binary folks. And so being really intentional about parsing out the data and being specific with the data and also looking at intersectional information and data is so important. And also recognizing that Blackness is not a monolith. And if you have multiple marginalized identities, in addition to being Black, your experiences can vary, right? As a younger or youngish millennial Black woman that is lighter skinned and not a descendant of enslaved people, my experience is different from a descendant of enslaved people who's a Gen Xer, who is also non-binary, who is, you know what I'm saying? So like, it's important to recognize that although Black people have a lot of similar experiences, our experiences are not all the same, and that things like misogynoir and colorism and even something like internalized anti-Blackness and internalized oppression impacts people's experiences. And so parsing out the data and disaggregating the data to really examine your Black employees specifically is so vital. You should always be doing that, right? And then also providing your employee population with education around these more nuanced issues of featureism, texturism, colorism, misogynoir, internalized oppression, anti-Blackness specifically. I don't see a lot of organizations and institutions focusing specifically on anti-Blackness. I did a few years ago, I did, I facilitated a workshop for a university in California on anti-blackness, and I loved it. I was talking about anti-blackness within academia, and it was dope, right? It's something I'm really passionate about, is like really having open conversations about anti-blackness, because anti-blackness is not something we talk about a lot. We talk about equity, diversity, inclusion. We've shifted the conversation and we talk about anti-racism, but are we also talking about anti-blackness? In my experiences, not enough. So really making sure that you are disaggregating the data and you're providing continuous and ongoing education for these more specific and nuanced issues that impact your Black employees. So that is where I'm going to wrap up today's episode. The link to the article titled Four Ways Anti-Blackness Shows Up in DEI will be in the show notes. Y'all, don't forget to grab or pre-order my book. I will be, I mentioned this in my email list, but I will be doing a contest where 10 of you all, 10 of the folks who've pre-ordered my book, I'll pre-select 10 people and they will get free consulting for 1 hour with me. So I'll have more details about that in the upcoming months, but be sure to pre-order my book. Please share with others that you think will find the book informative. I'm so excited to share bits and snippets with y'all as the year progresses. But thank y'all so much for listening. I will check y'all out in the next episode. Happy Black History Month. And yeah, that's where I'll leave off for today. Bye, y'all.